D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are scattered all over the place. Derek and I are live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall just across the Kentucky border. Willie Donick is in New York City at the world's most famous arena, quote-unquote. It is. It's a great arena. Madison Square Garden, where the Nashville Predators will take on the New York Rangers tonight. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5 The Game. So, an abbreviated DVD will take you right up to pregame at 5 o'clock. But after the game tonight in New York City, Willie Donick and the rest of the Predators traveling crew will hop on the plane and head across the Atlantic Ocean to Stockholm, Sweden, where the Predators will take on the Pittsburgh Penguins in two games, one on Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time and one on Sunday at 8 a.m. Central Time. So some morning hockey for y'all.
Y'all got room, Willie?
You got room for us, Willie? No?
Yeah. Hey, guys.
You got room for us, Willie?
On
the game
plane?
Just arrived the in the booth here. Oh, on the plane, dude. I hate to tell you guys, no. And we're not leaving from Nashville, so you guys are gonna have to hurry to get here.
Hey, listen, if they was telling me I was going to Sweden, no, best believe I was gonna be there. I was gonna be on that plane before it left.
Yes. So I'm getting a vibe. And this week I think is critical. Absolutely critical. For the Nashville Predators. The Predators have lost 7 of 8, won 5 and 2. They lost 5-4 to the Dallas Stars on Saturday. The Predators led 3-2 after two periods, led 4-3 in the third period, but were unable to close it out. So the Predators have lost 7 of their past 8 games, or in the NHL terms, they're winless in 7 of their past 8 games because they have 2 overtime losses. Nevertheless, 7 of the past 8, the Predators have not won. And this week reminds me a little bit of how I felt when the Predators were preparing to take on the Dallas Stars in the Winter Classic in January of 2020. I think this week is absolutely critical for Andrew Burnett. Absolutely critical. Because if the Predators go 0-for this week, that would be 10 of 11 that the Predators have lost. And I've told this story many a time. I left the dressing room at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas after the Predators lost to the Dallas Stars, and I said to myself, it may not happen today, it may not happen tomorrow, but Peter Laviolette's getting fired, and he got fired 5 days later. I'm not in the dressing room as much as I used to be, so I don't know if I have that same vibe. But I do think for this season – and for the perception of Andrew Burnett within the Predators fan base, Willie, I think this week, the game tonight against the Rangers, and specifically the two games in Sweden against the Penguins, are vital, absolutely vital for him and the team.
Well, I don't know if I'm getting any of those vibes from Barry Trotz. I would say that it's natural when a team has struggled the way they have. And we knew the circumstances coming into the year that he was going to be on the hot seat. But I think it's coming to a natural question, right, of how hot is the seat. But I will say this about what Andrew Burnett has done. Adam, what was he tasked to do in the offseason? Fix what?
The defense.
Right. Fix 5-on-5 play in general,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
5-on-5, they were awful last year. They got shelled. Now, this year, and you look at the same numbers I do, I think you can make a pretty good argument that he's done exactly what he has been told to do and been tasked to do in terms of put the team in a better position to win each night. They are basically in every game. And that's been the frustrating part, is they have not gotten it done in the close games. But analytically, we're... Last year, the expected delta, right, of what are you getting each night? What quality are you getting offensively, and what quality are you giving up defensively? They were losing that battle heartily. They were negative a quarter of a goal per game. Basically, this year, they're about 50-50. They were just over 50% the expected goals for percentage. until Saturday, which was a different type of game where they actually scored a bunch but gave up that one extra goal. And they were hanging on. Dallas was the better team 5-on-5 in that game. So it's about 49.7% right now. So he has done what he's been asked to do, Andrew Burnett, to get the team to play differently, play better defensively, don't give up as much easy stuff, and be opportunistic scoring goals. And I think that's the key word. They have not been opportunistic. And if anything, they have made the key mistakes at the key times. And so I would ask you, Adam, is that a coaching thing? I'll ask Derek as well. When the coach puts you in a close game every game, is it the coach that can take you over the top, or is it the players? I'll tell you what Steven Stamkos said after the game on Saturday. He said, and I want to pull up the quote so I make sure I've got it right, because my phone is acting as my light right now, so I have to take the light down to pull this quote up here. But he said, little details and execution in close games are not a coaching thing. It's a player thing. So I'm making the argument that Andrew Burnett has done exactly what he's been asked to do. But I understand the question, Adam, because it's a results-based operation.
Here's the hard part, Willie. You and I can tell fans that the process is better until the cows come home. But a lot of fans have a lot of concerns about this team. The Predators struggle to score. They have scored two or fewer goals more times than any other team in the NHL since the start of last season. Their one win over the past couple of weeks is against the worst team in the NHL, the Calgary Flames. And you're right, Willie, and I got extra nerdy today, and I looked this up. Over the past 8 games, remember, the Predators are 1-5-2 over the past 8 games. Over that span, the score has been within one goal 81% of the playing time. So you're right. They aren't getting blown off the ice surface in losing 7-of-8. But I think that there were fans who thought, hey, maybe last season was a bit fluky. All of these noted goal scorers, they just couldn't score for whatever reason. And this season, it'll regress to the mean. That hasn't happened. So I agree with you that in some aspects, the process looks better. And as I just said, the Predators aren't getting their doors blown off every night. But you lose 7-of-8, and you're falling out of the race. There are a lot of teams that have been the doormats of the Western Conference for the past few years that are ascending. The Anaheim Ducks are ascending. The Chicago Blackhawks are ascending. The Utah Mammoth, formerly the Utah Hockey Club, formerly the Arizona Coyotes, they seem to be ascending. The Predators are not. And I think that fans are more than justified in feeling concerned about the direction of the team right now.
They should feel concerned. They're not getting, what they thought they were going to be getting when all of this first came about a year ago. So they should be concerned. But listen, we all know that the only thing that happens in situations like this, because you can't trade the players, you just can't. And he's right. The little details, all that stuff, that is a player thing. That's the players doing what they're supposed to do to make sure they win games. Coaches put you in position. So he's not talking about they're not in position. They're in position. He's talking about they're just not executing. That has nothing to do with what the coach is coaching. He's putting you in a position. Coaches are there to maximize the potential and put you in a position to succeed. I think Coach Bruno has put these guys in those positions. It just hadn't worked out. So as much as you're right, Willie, and the player's right, but in this business, because you can't trade a player or fire a player, you end up firing the coach and hope that in a situation like this you get some type of bump and things change. But that's – it happens, but then a lot of times you just regress back to the means. You become the – after a couple of games, you become the team you ultimately were anyway prior to the coach getting fired. You just, for whatever reason, it happens. But ultimately, you end up being a bad team moving forward that year. So you can't change the players. You can't trade the players. The next thing GM's doing, I'm not saying Barry's going to do it on this one, but the next thing is, well, I got to fire the coach.
Yeah, my observation has always been this with hockey. I don't know what in our market. I can only talk about Nashville, but it seems like there always is a gravitation towards the fire the coach, and for a high slice of the blame, right? If you're dividing up the pie of who gets the blame, it's always disproportionate to the coach in my mind. For example. And I struggle with this because I understand this is going to be a subject while they go through this period here. And I don't know what their ceiling is. What's best case scenario? Like we talk about their analytics. They could easily have a much different record if they were better in the close games. But they're not. They haven't been. And why? Let's take the example with a game where there's 2 seconds left in overtime. And a player, and he's a good veteran player, Brady Shea. He makes a mental mistake and gets on the wrong side of a puck and gives up a goal with 1 second left in overtime on a game that should go to a shootout. Same exact thing happened in Montreal with different players on the ice. Jonathan Marchessault, Steven Stamkos. Where the coach has nothing to do with that, right? Those are veteran players on the ice making a poor decision in the blink of an eye that costs them a game right there, or at least a chance to win a game in a shootout. And they're pretty good in shootouts. So I ask myself the question, would a coach who is more demanding and a very different approach of Andrew Brunette, we've talked about Andrew Brunette is more of a player's coach. He believes in the players. He was a player himself. And he is not the guy that's going to go and be demanding and yank ice time, right? And maybe that is the flaw. But I wonder if would it be different under a different coach? Would those guys not make those mistakes? That's what I struggle with in games that are decided by a razor's edge. Saturday's game, they struggle at the beginning of the game. They come up big. They make some plays. Steven Stamkos rifles a shot to give them a lead in the third period. In a game that, in the first period, they probably had no business being in. So why can't they take it to the finish line? I'm thinking you're at home. Drive to the finish line. Have an inspiring win where you win against a good team. Instead, they let down on consecutive shifts. And as Andrew Brunette put it, major, major breakdowns that opened up the ice for a really good team to score back-to-back goals. Right? Is that the coach? I don't know. But I do observe, right, all of us observe, that Andrew Brunette is not a fiery, demanding coach that's all over his team every day that's saying, if you don't do what I say, I'm yanking playing time. And that's the old school, right? Most coaches are gravitating away from the old school to the new school. But the attention to detail of this team is its weakness, right? They're not going to blow teams out. That's another weakness. They don't have huge horses. They're not going to blow you away with talent. But they're good enough to be in each game. So they have to be opportunistic, and they're not.
Fans want to feel that the organization, to your point, Willie, about firing the coach and fans wanting to fire the coach, fans want to feel that the organization is committed to fixing this. And we've spoken about the bloodlust in the past, right?
Yes.
With the Titans, fans want someone to be held responsible for the poor record. And here's the worst part, guys. And Derek, you and I talked about this last week, one day when Willie was out. The Predators are not trying to be bad. It would be one thing if the Predators were actively rebuilding and struggling. Think about the San Jose Sharks, or in recent years, the Chicago Blackhawks, or the Anaheim Ducks. The Predators are not trying to be bad. Barry Trotz built this team to compete for a playoff spot, and they look nothing like a threat. If you look at the top of the standings, Do you think any of those top teams in the Western Conference look at the Predators and go, wouldn't want to draw them in a first-round playoff series? No. So I get what you're saying, Willie. I understand that it's the easy thing to do. It's to fire the coach. It's the easy thing to do. But I just think that there is this perception that if Barry Trotz continues to commit to Andrew Burnett and the team continues to lose, it looks like the Predators are not committed to trying to fix this.
Well, I think if you really understand what they're doing, they are still buying time for the group of players that's in Milwaukee and other places. I think he said, what did he tell us, Adam, in our preseason? There are 11 first-round picks in the system that are around the globe, either in Nashville, they just called up Joachim Kemmel. He's not going to play tonight, but the guys in Milwaukee, the guys on the Predators, and the guys like Igor Sorin, who looks really good in the KHL right now, playing different places. Ultimately, it's going to be that group that is the next. He's saying we're recreating the next core, right? And let's also say they haven't had Roman Josi, their best player, for 8 games. So these games that you're talking about, Adam, all of them have been played without Roman Josi. That's a huge thing that should not be overlooked. But the fans don't seem to gravitate towards that. And they overlook what Barry Trotz has been saying until he's blue in the face every week. I'm creating a new core. He's buying time while these guys mature. Matt Wood is a good story right now. Spencer Stastny is a good story right now. So you're starting to see a little bit. Evangelista has been okay, right? Ultimately, it's the transition that's going on. It's not a full rebuild, but it's also not an all-in kind of situation by any stretch. If it were an all-in situation, I think they would already have probably fired Andrew Burnett, right? But he's trying to show some patience here. But what I just don't understand is why does all of it go at Burnett and not a, hey, what's wrong with Steven Stamkos? Why would Brady Shea do what he did at the end of the game? The players don't get like a football team where people will get on certain people, with, like the quarterback, right? There's a lot of that that goes on. So I try to be deeper with my analysis and not just as simple as, yeah, they're struggling, so fire the coach. But I understand that sometimes a shakeup is what a team tries to do to get more out of the group, like D-Mace just said.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators. They've lost 7 of 8. They're playing the New York Rangers tonight. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5 The Game. Is Andrew Burnett's job at stake this week? Should Andrew Burnett's job be at stake this week? Or you can answer Welly's question as well. Why are we so focused on the coach and not so much the players, which is also...
And the fact that they're playing without their best player. You just said they've won 1 of their last 8. All of those are without Roman Yossi.
Okay. 615... Yes, that is a true fact.
I'm only talking about the coach, right? What I'm saying, so the coach lost the best player. That's got nothing to do with him, right?
We got to go to break. We'll pick this up. 615, we can argue for the next 40 minutes if you want, but we do have to pay the bill. 615-737.
It's good to have my voice back, isn't it?
Yes, it is. 615, I missed you. 615-737-1025. D-Mace, Ving, and Adonic is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate right now at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Ving, and Adonic, 1025 The Game. Willie Adonic, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. David James is back at our Game Nashville studios. The Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, I should say. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Talking Predators, the Predators are back in action tonight against the New York Rangers. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5 The Game. By the way, the Rangers have yet to win at home this season. They're 0-6-1 at home. The Rangers have been shut out in 5 of their first 7 home games. It's the first time that's happened to an NHL team in nearly 100 years. The other team was the Pittsburgh Pirates, not the baseball Pittsburgh Pirates. There was apparently an NHL Pittsburgh Pirates, and that's how far back you have to go since an NHL team was shut out 5 times in their first 7 home games. So let's see if the Predators can keep that going. But we're talking about the state of the team. I think this week is critical for not only the Predators, but more specifically Andrew Burnett, with this game in New York, the two games in Sweden later in the week against the Penguins. And, Willie, one thing that we've talked about in the past that I think is important to keep in mind. Over the summer, you and me were doing a show. Derek was on vacation at the time. And we were looking at a story written by Daily Faceoff. The author's name escapes me at the moment, but a really good article. And the author looked at the length of rebuilds, the average length of rebuilds in the NHL, I think in the salary cap era, so over the past 20 years. And the average length of a rebuild, 8.5 years. And there were certain criteria for what constitutes a rebuild, but 8.5 years. The Predators, by the author's definition, had never undergone a rebuild. And it's one thing I've wondered with Predators fans. Would you welcome a traditional rebuild? Because the Predators have been bad before. They were bad just last season. But the Predators and their fans have never had to really live through, except for the beginning of the franchise when it was an expansion franchise, have never really had to live through multiple years of not even coming close to making the playoffs and picking high at the top of the draft. But when you look at the difference makers in the NHL, you look at the top scorers in the NHL. Almost all of them, if they weren't number one overall draft picks, were top five, top 10 draft picks. Nathan MacKinnon, Leo Carlson, Connor Bedard, Macklin Celebrini, William Nylander, Jack Eichel, Connor McDavid. Like, I really do think that until the Predators can find one of those players, this is what they're going to be. And look, last season, they were bad. They got Brady Martin. Maybe this season, they'll be bad. They'll draft at the top of the draft again. Who knows? But it's an interesting question, Willie, because Predators fans have been spoiled. Predators fans haven't had to live through those lean years where you go 6, 7, 8 years in a row when you're uncompetitive.
Yeah, there's no question that goes into it. And I think you would have to hope that because they've laid the groundwork for the last few years, really, going back to when they announced that David Boyle would retire and Barry Trotz came in, and what they have done with the farm system since then, and selling off a lot of pieces at the moment, right, where they acquired a bunch of draft assets, which they have not really learned what they've got and what they don't have from that, but it's somewhat promising, you would have to think, right? Their system is pretty deep. It's not loaded at the top with premier superstars. That's the biggest weakness of the farm system. But the strength of it is they're very deep in pool when it comes to a lot of players that look like they're going to be good NHL players. So in theory, if they had to take some steps back, which they could, right? They could decide this year after another couple of months. And that's why I don't know if I'm buying exactly what you're saying, Adam, in everything's riding on this week. Maybe, but I think the reality is if it keeps moving in this direction, even if they play better, but it's obvious that I think the point you made that's probably the best in my mind, Adam, is are they really a threat to do much if they're able to have a successful season and make the playoffs? It looks like they're going to come up short in that area unless they get a huge boost from Roman Josi when he comes back, or they get a huge run by UC Soros with great defense in front of them, or they get a pop from some of these young guys earlier than expected. These are the things that you can't really predict. But they could easily pivot at the right time and still probably slide down the standings and end up picking high. But you would have to hope that a rebuild, per se, wouldn't take 8.5 years, because they've already, for the last 3 or 4 years, been accumulating a pretty good farm system.
Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, and welcome in our friend Adam from Portland. Adam, thank you so much for calling. Please go ahead.
Well, I welcome the rebuild, but it's funny that you say it. Like, we've never torn it down before. Like, our captain has pots. Like, our best player hasn't been great for, like, 7 years. Our goalie is short. I know you love him, Willie, but, like, we're locked into him for 8 years, and I don't think he's anything super, super special. Like, I welcome tearing it down, but how much can you actually tear it down with these contracts, man? Like, I don't like. What are we allowed to do? You know what I mean?
Thank you for the call, Adam. Willie, your thoughts?
I lost him at the end there. How much can you tear down?
Because of the clauses in the contracts, I presume, of the top players who would probably be of interest to other teams.
Well, everybody's got those players. I think you would. Roman Josi has what, 3 years left? What he's dealing with now has nothing to do with the Pots. So he's not playing because of Pots. So I still believe that there is really good hockey left for Roman Josi. Steven Stamkos has what, 2 years left after this? Jonathan Marchessault has maybe 3 years after this. Soros is certainly not the problem at all. And there's a long way to go on his deal. I don't think he's a guy that you're looking to trade anytime soon. But other than that, I think there's plenty of flexibility within the roster to move aside some veterans who are on short-term deals and allow the space for younger guys to come up. The problem is you don't want to rush those guys to the NHL level right now. Yeah, I think what the idea is right now is have two or three at a time, get a little taste, like, and hopefully have some success like Matt Wood is right now. And then as time goes forward, there's room for the next guy to start getting his feet wet. Maybe it's Kemmel. Maybe it's Reed Schaefer. Maybe eventually it's David Edstrom, who's a little bit younger. Down the road next year, maybe Brady Martin's ready. These are all guys that over the next 2 or 3 years, it's going to take some time. And that's what you have to – there's no quick fix here. But that's the idea. But I do think the roster has more flexibility than some people might think. Do you agree, Adam, or am I barking up the wrong tree here? Like, who other than 4 or 5 contracts, which every team has got long-term commitments to, I don't care if you're rebuilding or not, tell me why they're locked into too many guys. Who are the guys?
Here are the players whose contracts expire at the end of this season. Michael Bunting, Eric Halla, Cole Smith, Michael McCarron, Tyson Jost, and Nick Blankenberg are all unrestricted free agents this coming summer. So a lot of players can get cycled out, to your point. But you did say something earlier that I think a lot of Predators fans are feeling when it comes to the future. The Predators prospect system has plenty of solid players in it, but it's missing its crown jewel. And the Predators are hoping that it's Brady Martin, right? Or if the Predators are lucky, you could call it lucky, if the Predators are lucky enough to land the number one pick in this coming draft and they take Gavin McKenna, who is supposed to be in that Bedard, Celebrini-type conversation, that sort of player, then Gavin McKenna would be that crown jewel. I'm watching the Dallas Stars on Saturday afternoon, and there are multiple young players on that team who you already know are impactful players in the NHL who represent the future. Wyatt Johnston, and he's no longer on the team, but Logan Stankoven before he was traded for Mikko Rantanen. He was one of those players. Thomas Harley on defense. Maverick Bourque. You could see the future of the Stars when Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn and Roope Hintz and Mikko Rantanen, they age out. You've got that young core. The Predators do not have that young core right now. I know it's being built, as Barry Trotz says, but it's not there right now. There is nobody on that ice surface. To no disrespect to Matthew Wood, who's having a strong start to his season, or any of the other younger players who have played for this team so far this season. To me, Willie, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, there is no younger player in the NHL right now for the Predators that gets me out of my seat. And I don't think any of them are going to. I don't think Matthew Wood's going to be that type of player. I don't think Luke Evangelista is going to be that type of player. I don't think Fedor Svechkov is going to be that type of player. They can be good players. But who's the player, the younger player, that the Predators can sell to their fans right now? Like, Forsberg's getting older, Josi's getting older, but just you wait until player X is the future of the franchise. You can already see it. That player at the moment does not exist on this roster.
I think that's undetermined of who could develop into a really good player. But as far as showstopper, no, they don't have that guy.
Willie, I know that you have
can't miss showstopper guy. No,
right,
a collective group of really good players, one or two of which might turn into something pretty special. Yeah, I think that's possible with strength in numbers.
Willie, I know that you have...
I think they both can be effective.
I know that you have to get ready for the broadcast, and right after the broadcast, you're shipping off to Sweden. We hope you have a wonderful, safe flight. We do plan on talking to you at some point when you're in Sweden. By the way, Stockholm, 7 hours ahead of Nashville.
Ooh,
so I don't think Willie's going to be joining our program at 10 p.m. at the start of our program at 10 p.m. Stockholm time. But we will make sure that we get visits from Willie Donick over the next few days. Willie, have a good call tonight. Have a safe trip. And we'll talk to you at some point this week from Sweden.
Thank you, gentlemen. Sounds good.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Predators. They take on the New York Rangers. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5. And because of that, we're going to wrap up the show next. Some major news in the NFL that we will get to coming up next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Predators pregame coming up next at 5 o'clock. An early start because the Predators are in New York City to take on the Rangers. A 6 p.m. Central puck drop, which means pregame starts at the top of the hour. Derek Mason and I are live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall. If you're looking for a place to watch the Monday Night Football game, because many of you may not have access to ESPN or ABC right now.
I'm one of those people.
Well, you should stick around and watch the Eagles take on the Packers right behind us on these gigantic screens. So if you're looking for a place to watch the game because you can't watch the game at home, may I suggest the Circus Sportsbook just over the Kentucky border, roughly a 35, 40-ish minute drive from downtown Nashville. A couple of texts on our Predators conversation to wrap that up. George from Murfreesboro says, David Poile really doesn't get enough criticism for how awful his drafts were from 2016 to 2022. Kemmel and LaRue are still young, but Poile really should be criticized like John Robinson was. So there are four first-round draft picks from that era who are no longer members of this organization. Dante Fabbro, whom the Predators waived. Eli Tolvanen, whom the Predators also waived. Philip Tomasino, whom the Predators waived, if I'm not mistaken. Or did they trade him? I can't remember. I believe they traded him, actually. And Yaroslav Askarov, who was traded to the San Jose Sharks. So that's your 2016, 2017, 2019, and 2020 first-round draft picks who are no longer members of the organization. Fedor Svechkov and Zachary LaRue are still on the team. Those were the first-round draft picks in 2021. Joachim Kemmel recalled today. He's the 2022 first-round draft pick. Matthew Wood, he's on the ice for the Predators. Tanner Molendijk's in the system. But I get the texter's point that the Predators, when they weren't trading away first-round picks because they were going for it, they haven't been able to retain a lot of those first-round picks or have chosen not to retain those first-round picks. So, look, I hear what Willie is saying. I appreciate his defense of the Predators. My point is, if the Predators go 0-for this week, if they lose to the Rangers tonight, especially considering the Rangers, again, have not won at home all season. They've been shut out 5 times in 7 home games this season. If the Predators lose to the Rangers and then go to Sweden and lose to the Penguins twice, and the Penguins are playing quite well, that would be 10 losses in 11 games. And I just don't know as an organization how you can keep fans believing in your process if you don't fire a coach after losing 10 of 11. So that's my point. If this week is worst case scenario, I don't know how the Predators don't fire Brunette when they get back.
I guess it all depends on how it looks.
That is part of it.
Again.
But keep in mind something, actually, not to interrupt.
Yes.
I looked this up. So I mentioned the Winter Classic. The Predators, after they lost to the Dallas Stars, actually played 2 more games before Laviolette was fired. They played a back-to-back in Southern California against the Kings and Ducks. They beat the Kings. I looked this up yesterday. They beat the Kings, and they lost to the Ducks in a shootout. So it wasn't like they were blown out in those two games. Mm-hmm. But then they fired Laviolette when they got back, almost like they were planning on doing it, probably because they were. So, like, I get your point, Derek. Maybe they lose these three games. They don't look bad in defeat, but it's still 10 losses in 11 games.
Yeah, it's still 10 losses. And we were talking earlier about, you know, the small things. And one of the players talked about the attention to detail. Stamkos talked about the attention to detail and these little small things. And then I got to reading about, and we're going to talk about this or something relating to this before we get off air quickly, about Brian Daboll.
Yep, we're going to talk about
that. And there was a passage, an article by Jordan Renan.
Of ESPN.com.
And it says, why fire Daboll now? Coaching can make a difference in close games. And the Giants have already blown 4 double-digit leads on the road this season.
Yikes.
That is what I think the fans are saying. That's what they think. And I understand what Willie is saying, and I think that, like, listen, coaches put them in a position to win ball games. Now it's up to the player to execute it. But there are a lot of people that believe in those moments, that's what separates good coaches from great coaches, is they find a way. And Willie sort of alluded to it. Maybe he's not that, you know, get on your ass type of coach. He's more of a player's coach. Maybe that's what's missing. Because in those key moments, maybe a different approach or a different voice will make the difference in those games. So, again, it depends on how they, you know, look in this next three games. But then again, it could also mean, well, we played 3 close games. Why were you not able as a coach to get your team to at least win 1 or 2 of those games?
As I said, over the past 8 games, the Predators have lost 7 of those 8 games. Mm-hmm. The score has been within one goal more than 80% of the time. So it's not like they're getting blown out.
No.
But as you just said, talking about Brian Daboll, winning close games, the coach can make that difference. Mm-hmm. If you're right there, the coach can give you that little extra push to win those close games. And as you mentioned, Brian Callahan, not the only NFL head coach on the unemployment line after the New York Giants fired Brian Daboll today. The Giants 2-8 on the season. And here's something interesting within that same story on ESPN.com that you referenced. And I want to know how much coaching plays into this. Mm-hmm. Quote, rookie quarterback Jackson Dart also suffered a concussion in the Giants' 24-20 loss to the Chicago Bears. That was the 4th time Dart has been evaluated for a concussion this year, including the preseason.
Dart is Will Levis. This is
so that's so you don't think coaching plays at all into the fact that he's been concussed 4 times?
I think coaching, you can stress it, you can stress it, you can stress it. And some guys get it right away. And some guys, it just either they get it a little bit later or that's just the way they play. You know, they're aggressive in their place in their playing style. So I don't know what if Brian Daboll preached this to him every day, because we're on the other end of the spectrum. We're like, Cam, run, please. Like, can y'all tell him to please run? You know?
Right.
But the Giants are like, no, he doesn't need to run. At least that's what, you know, I'm sure some of their fans, because he plays reckless out there. If you've watched New York, and I've watched him a few times, I hadn't watched him a lot, but he does play reckless. At times it could be helpful, but at times it could be detrimental to your health. And we see with Jackson Dart, he's been removed from a game and evaluated for a concussion 4 times. That is not by happenstance. When those things happen, I've always said, when you get one, the second one is easier to get, and so forth and so on, especially if you don't take the necessary time out away from the game when you've been evaluated for a concussion or you've had one. It's, oh, let's see how he does through the week. Let's put him in a dark room, and let's not let him practice. But if he passed these tests and he goes out there in warm-ups, you know, a day or two before before the game, then we're good. No, he's not good, because once you sit him back out there and he get hit again, you're starting right back at square one. That's where I'm probably sure Dart is. He plays reckless. I'm not sure if Daboll or any other one of those coaches were telling the kid to back off. I'm sure players were like, man, you need not do that. But until it's stressed, like, it almost has to be one of those deals where every time I see you, I say, protect yourself. Don't run as much. To get it in your head, like, don't play. Go through the progressions. And if you have to run, run. But there are times he didn't really – it was like, oh, I don't see nothing, I'm running. That's how Will Levis was last year. And what happened to Will Levis? He got hurt. But we're on the other end of the spectrum, like, Cam, please run. That should tell us, don't beg for this man to run.
So
don't.
Is it the responsibility of the coach to save the quarterback from himself?
I think, yeah. I think eventually it's what it comes down to, because I said coaches are there to put you in the best position to succeed.
Right.
That's what their job is. Develop you and put you in the best, and then allow your talent to take hold. Boom, there you go. A part of that is, hey, kid, know when to get down. Mike Heimerdinger, and I'm not a quarterback. Mike Heimerdinger told me this a long time ago, because I was one of those guys. Like, man, that's how I was raised. That's how I was brought up. Get every inch that you possibly can on that football field.
I'm thinking of Justin Herbert against the Titans last week. He was running right into defensive backs.
It's, like, every once in a while, yes, when you, like, if it's that time of the game, and yes, there is a moment where you gotta, okay, I gotta take this one. But not every time. Mike Heimerdinger told me, listen, we need you. We don't need you to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Know when the journey is in. We know when the journey in and get down. We'll get that extra yard on the next play. We got Eddie George. We got a big back. We'll get that yard. We got the offensive line. But we don't need you to get hurt trying to get one extra yard. And I had to learn how to get down and learn when the journey was over so I can be available for my team the next play. He hasn't learned that. Will Levis didn't learn it. And Jackson Dart seems to be not learning it. But that is something that the coach has to drill in his head. Because if you don't, he's going to keep on playing that way, because that's familiar with him. You know, he's been doing this his whole career. And he's good at it. But in this league, there's other guys that are you 6'6". There's defensive ends that are 6'6", too, and they're running faster than you, and they're coming at you.
I'm just glad you didn't say 6'7".
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that. Now, these kids,
I don't
understand it either. My kids told me, and I don't understand it either.
My son is too young for memes. By the way, the Giants were 9-7-1 in Brian Daboll's first season in 2022 and made the playoffs. Over the past three seasons, they're 11-33. The second worst record in the NFL during that span, only the Titans at 10-33. Are worse.
Man, we are one game worse, huh?
Yeah, it's bad out there. It's bad out there. Speaking of New York, one texter says, Rangers fan here, back to hockey quickly. If the Preds lose to the Rangers tonight, y'all need to fire your coach. He must be listening. The Rangers are 0-6-1 at home, mentioned that, have scored a total of 6 goals across all home games and have been shut out 5 times at home, mentioned that as well. So, I don't have a lot of high hopes for the Predators. Mm-hmm. I said on opening night when we were at Bridgestone Arena, I thought the Predators' path to the playoffs was as narrow as a tightrope. I don't believe in this team, the construction of the roster. I'm not sure the coach is the right coach for this group. I think what you've seen from them is about what I expected. And although their record isn't, let me rephrase this. They're not getting blown out a lot, but they're just not making winning plays consistently enough. They can't score consistently. They're a tough watch, and I'll be watching. I'll be watching at 6 o'clock. But they're a tough watch.
They are a team. They are a. This is what you see from rebuilding teams.
Yes.
Stuff like this: play close games,
right,
but ultimately not win them. But they don't want to say they're in the rebuild.
615-7 but why am I giving you the number? I'm so used to doing that because we're not usually done at 5 o'clock, but we are done at 5 o'clock today because the Predators play the Rangers. Puck drop at 6. Pre-game starts at the top of the hour. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Monday. I love you. The team love you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us because we will be back tomorrow at 3. Peace.